We've read and heard quite a bit about meditation in recent years. Quite a bit of it comes from the realm of psychology and counseling and coaching, and well, it should, because you know those the benefits are very, very real and very tangible. But at its heart, meditation has a deeper dimension, because we can come into contact with that which we experience as sacred or holy. This is the dimension that gives rise to the Hindu phrase, tatvamasi, which usually is translated, that thou art. What this means in its Hindu context, and in general what people who think along these lines have deduced from that, is that our self, our innermost nature, what's deepest in here, in its original state, is wholly or partially identifiable, or identical even, with the ultimate reality that's the ground of our being, the ground and origin of all phenomena, the innermost essence of all beings that exist, absolutely everything. Now that's a revolutionary statement. It was a revolutionary statement in its time. It has echoed through the centuries in different forms. It's also a statement that when I came across it, and I was a grad student at the time, I think, the first time I came across it, that was absolutely revelatory for me personally. Because having grown up with a belief in my own unworthiness, really having been drilled into me, tatvamasi came as extraordinarily good news. Somehow, I don't know how, but somehow I knew from the get-go that its truth was profoundly true for me as well. Do I always remember this? Heck no. But do I know it? Yes. In meditation, we can come to know that dimension of ourselves. We can touch that part of us, that place in us, where the holy or the sacred resides. And we can come to perceive that same essence more clearly in the entire web of being. We come to know this not as a matter of doctrine or teaching, but as a matter of our lived experience. Buddhist monk Ajahn Brahm is the abbot and spiritual director of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. He's also a wonderful storyteller. His account of a man with a newspaper highlights motifs that are central to my understanding of meditation and to my appreciation of its potential. While still a student, he writes, I would spend most of my summer vacations walking and camping in the highlands of Scotland. I delighted in the solitude and beauty and peace of the Scottish mountains. One memorable afternoon, I was ambling along the ocean on a narrow road which wound along the headlands and inlets of the far north. The warm, bright sun was like a spotlight for the extraordinary beauty around me. The moorland was an endless sweep of velvety grass in the fresh green of springtime. The cliffs had been sculpted like cathedrals soaring high above the swirling sea. The ocean was the blue of late evening, as if scattered with fairy lights sparkling and twinkling in the sun rays. And small green and brown wrack islands seemed to surface on the waves as far as the haze line of the horizon. Even the gulls and terns were gliding and wheeling, in euphoria, I was certain. It was nature showing its finest, one of the most scenic parts of the world, on a day of sunny glory. A little bit like this morning, only different. I was skipping along in spite of my heavy backpack. I was joyous, without a care, high on the inspiration of nature. Ahead of me, I saw a small car parked by the roadside next to the cliff. Immediately, I imagined that its driver had also been overcome by the beauty of the day here and stopped to drink in its ambrosia. When I was close enough to the car to see through its back window, I was disappointed and dismayed. Single occupant of that vehicle, a middle-aged man, was reading a newspaper. The newspaper was so big it blocked the whole view of the world around him. Instead of seeing ocean and cliff and island and grassland, all he could see was war and politics and scandals and sport. The newspaper was wide, yet very thin. Only a few millimeters on the other side of that black, dreary newsprint lay the pure, rainbow-colored elation of nature. I thought to take out a pair of scissors from my pack and cut a small hole in his newspaper so he could see what was on the other side of the article on the economy he was reading. But he was a big, hairy Scotsman, and I was a scrawny, underfed graduate student. I left him to read about the world while I danced on into it. If we cannot be fully present to our own experience, we're very likely not to catch the flickers of mystery that flit like fireflies or like sun on the ocean around the edges of our ordinary everyday experience. We miss the miracle that is the everyday. Brahm doesn't use the word miracle, but his engaging description of his experience of the natural world echoes that sensibility. That's important for us as you use, because remember that the very first source from which we draw is the direct experience of transcending mystery and wonder that's affirmed in all cultures. Many, probably most of us, aren't too much interested in the idea of a God who contravenes natural law to produce miracles. But that doesn't mean that we live a life devoid of miracle. We're invited to a very direct, immediate, lived experience of that mystery and wonder that people for eons have associated with miracle. It's as with the air, we're surrounded, immersed in the sacred or the holy. We're usually unaware of the air that surrounds us, but we can become aware of a fleeting fragrance, a fresher breeze, the sheer amazement of drawing breath when we pause and pay attention. We pause and pay attention. Meditation is training in doing just that, in pausing and paying attention. In formal meditation, and as we extend that practice into moments of informal meditation, we practice. We become open. We learn to see, we learn to pause, we learn to stop. We need stillness, we need presence, we need awareness and focus to apprehend what's going on in our experience. And an important aspect of this is closing the newspaper, if you will, living our experience directly without putting thoughts, judgments, regrets about the past, worrying about the future, without putting all those things in between us and our experience. Simply being with whatever our experience is in the present moment. We don't identify with it. We don't try to hang on to it if we're enjoying it, or we don't try to push it away if we're not enjoying it. We don't compare it with similar experiences. We simply are. We are as an experiencing human being. By living in this way, we open to the ways in which the sacred manifests itself precisely through ordinary reality, precisely as ordinary reality, because they're one and the same. All aspects of life can be vehicles for the apprehension of the holy, if we're but aware. Can we recognize the sacred in washing up the dishes or grooming the dog? Many people touch the sacred while digging in the rich loam of their garden and planting seeds that will become flowers or wonderful veggies. But how about when that same dirt gets tracked in on the carpet? Perhaps we experience the holy in the birth of a child. Can we recognize it equally at the bedside of a dying friend? Lived in this way, everything without exception becomes a potential experience of the sacred. Traditionally, religious people say that God speaks through every realm of our lives. Through devotion, yes, worship, obviously, but also through work, play, through sexuality, which incidentally is our theme for next month, the delight of a child, the busyness of middle age, and the gathering mystery of aging, in birth, in death, in life, in between. It's all available to us. Being more fully present for other people and caring for the web of existence itself follows naturally from this enhanced awareness and appreciation of the holy within everything. Our principles call us to respect the dignity and worth of every single person, and to work for justice and compassion in human relations. And a big part of that being fully present for our lives is being fully present for the other people in our lives. If we've had some experience with meditation and its way of leading us into greater presence and focused awareness, we can become more aware of the ways in which the holy manifests and calls for social justice, human compassion. This means being more and more fully aware of our neighbor, of the inherent value of every person. As our children's story suggested, it calls on us to see our neighbor's need and to respond appropriately, which means in the first place seeing that need accurately for what it is, then responding with wisdom and compassion. We must be able to listen, to really listen. This means listening without judging. It means listening without thinking about what our reply will be or about how we might fix the person speaking to us. It means attending to what is said and also to the unspoken cries of the heart. We become more able to hear the holy in other people's words. And as sometimes is said traditionally, people become for us the Christ, the Buddha, or Krishna, as well as being their fully human selves. Another of our principles calls on us to respect the interdependent web of all existence, of which we're a part, and to take care of our planet. Bruce Russell Jane's sermon last Sunday was a very powerful statement of what's happening to our earth, to our home, because we haven't been taking care of it. A significant part of taking care, of being careful in our relationship with the world around us, is being aware. Before we can take care, we have to be aware. Now, we do have a problem here because there are some very powerful forces at work, it seems to me, in our culture that undermine this kind of presence and awareness. And I don't think there's too much that supports it. Being is not valued as highly as doing. We're busy and we're busier. And often it seems we think of our worth as measured by how busy we are, how much doing we can pack into each day. We also have an ever-increasing array of tech gadgets to distract us. I've been reading news reports this past week coming out of the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. It's held every year. And, oh my goodness, I mean from virtual reality headsets that apparently plug us into a whole different world that looks for all the world like it really is real. Just thinking about that makes me a little seasick. To little robot creatures that do various things. Some incredible things coming out of that show. But they're a distraction. In order to be present, to be aware, to be open, we have to first slow down. Pause. Stop. We must allow silence into our lives. The very first thing I recall reading, and it was a long time ago, about meditation was a line in an article by Jon Kabat-Zinn, who at the time was the founder of the mindfulness-based stress reduction program at Massachusetts General Hospital. I think the sentence went like this. Meditation is an island of being in the midst of a sea of doing. Meditation is an island of being in the midst of a sea of doing. That has stayed with me as my basic working description of meditation as a process. And it's part of what draws me back again and yet again to the practice. Elsewhere, Jon Kabat-Zinn writes, "The habit of ignoring our present moments in favor of others yet to come leads directly to a pervasive lack of awareness of the web of life in which we are embedded. This includes a lack of awareness and understanding of our own mind and how it influences our perception and actions. It severely limits our perspective on what it means to be a person and how we're connected to each other and to the world around us. To allow ourselves to be truly in touch with where we already are, no matter where that is, we've got to pause in our experience long enough to let the present moment sink in. Long enough to actually feel the present moment, to see it in its fullness, to hold it in awareness, and thereby come to know and to understand it better. To whatever extent we can do this, we can appreciate the deep mystery of being alive, and we can acknowledge being vitally connected to all that exists. Meditation allows us to practice being fully present in this way, without judging, without identifying, without grasping or rejecting. As we come to live our experience more deeply, we begin to perceive the holy in our experience of the everyday. And this changes our experience of other persons and of the earth that we all share. Amen.